Good morning, everybody. Well, Jeff actually did half my presentation in his opening remarks about, you know, how you partner with schools by finding out what their needs are and what their accountabilities are and how it's not all about those of us in public health. So he just saved a bunch of time, so thanks. I want to start, when I travel for work, there are two things that I do that I don't normally do when I am at home, one of which is read USA Today, and the other is watch morning news shows. And USA Today is wonderful in one sense, which is I don't think I've ever been on a trip where I had to give a presentation, and I couldn't find something in USA Today that was absolutely relevant to what I was going to talk about sometime in the next couple days. So there's an article this morning about sunscreen, and there's a quote. Quote, often sunscreen application at school seems to be an issue that each individual school district rules on, says Jennifer Allen of the American Academy of Dermatology. That then sums up health and schools. It's all about school districts. And so what I'm going to do is kind of walk you through very briefly an intro to how schools work. You know, where's the governance? Where are the points of influence? And then really use the discussion time later to talk about, well, what does that mean for us now? Jeff said I'm with the National Education Association's Health Information Network. The NEA is the largest organization of school employees in the country. We have over 3 million members. The majority of those are teachers, but about 500,000 are what we call education support professionals, the custodians, the secretaries, the paraeducators, the allied health professionals, the food service workers, security, IT folks, who keep schools running. We are a nonprofit affiliated with them, and our mission since 1987 has been to improve the health and safety of the school community. So our first piece of really good partnerships with public health is in this slide. I stole it from Hal Wexler at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Some of you who work in youth health may know Hal as the director of the Division of Adolescent and School Health. Our young people really are served by a whole number of systems. And all of these systems are important. They all influence the outcomes for kids. But we're really going to focus on schools. Anybody know who Willie Sutton was? Okay, Willie Sutton was a bank robber. When Willie Sutton was asked why he robbed banks, he said, because that's where the money is. Well, too often, some of us in the education world feel like the banks. Because people come to our door and they want to do things with kids, for kids, to kids. And yes, well, why here? Well, it's because where the kids are. And in fact, at least still at the moment, our public education system is, in fact, the one place where we can find the vast majority of the kids in the country at some point in their lives. So it does become a critical, critical system for helping to improve the health outcomes. Both because health outcomes have value in and of themselves, which is what we believe on the public health side, and because improving their health actually improves their academic well-being. And that's important in and of itself for the education side. So if we take the 50,000-foot view of school governance, one of the most important things we have to remember is that from a constitutional responsibility perspective, it is states. It is all about states. You could, in fact, eliminate every dollar of federal education spending, and states would still have to be responsible for public education. You could, in fact, and I'm not advocating doing this, No, I'm not. But you could, in fact, eliminate local school districts, and states would still be responsible for public education. Historically, the federal role has been around ensuring equity. Some of the ways it does that is through Title I of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, which we knew for a few years as No Child Left Behind. I'm sure at some point we'll know it as something else. Congress has been busy with other things, but reauthorizing this hasn't happened yet, so we don't know yet. The Individuals with Disability Education Act, or IDEA, is around equity for kids with special learning needs. It is states who set the standards and the assessments. And if anybody of you have ever tried to explain American public education to your friends and colleagues in Europe, you know that you will get lots of quizzical looks. Because the idea that a major industrialized country could have 50 different sets of standards for learning and 50 different sets of assessments is mind-boggling, absolutely mind-boggling to anybody in an industrialized country. And in fact, when you look at the countries we are often compared with, one of those things those countries all have in common, whether it is Finland or Singapore, is that they have a set of national standards. One of the biggest innovations that folks in public health do need to be aware of is the development of the Common Core standards, Common Core state standards in English language arts and mathematics. That's a voluntary effort by states to come up with a common set of standards. Each state will still have its own assessments, its own criteria for what constitutes passing or mastery, but it is a step forward. Historically, states have given a lot of control for the day-to-day running of schools to local school boards. Again, some context. Federal spending on education is really pretty small. The Department of Ed dollars are less than 10%. The exact number varies. The Department of Agriculture spends money on the school meal program, which is a critical piece of the health infrastructure for schools. The Department of Health and Human Services, particularly through the Centers for Disease Control and through what was the Division of Adolescent and School Health, and those programs have now been split into a couple different centers at CDC, has a long period of partnership with departments of education. One of the most innovative things that was done when the Division of Adolescent and School Health was set up, its original mandate was around HIV prevention. Its founding director, Dr. Lloyd Colby, met with folks on the education side, folks from the Council of Chief State School Officers, National Association of State Boards of Education, the main education governance organizations, and said, how are we going to make a difference for schools? How can we get HIV education into our nation's schools? Now, this is 1987. No one was talking about HIV education for kids at that point. We were all just panicking. And what those education leaders said was, if you want to have things happen in schools, you need to fund education. You can't just fund public health. And so they created an innovative model where actually every state department of education was able to have a CDC-funded HIV/AIDS coordinator. And some of you may be familiar with that program. When they moved into chronic disease prevention, they actually funded a model where state departments of education and departments of health were co-funded for chronic disease prevention, and they each had a person who was a director of coordinated school health or a similar title. Those kinds of innovative partnerships help to drive the capacity of state departments of education to do for local departments of education what they do, which is set standards, set assessments, provide professional development, provide guidance on curriculum and materials, all of the things that have to happen. So that, I think, you know, and that's not a new or emerging partnership. That's been around now for 25 years. My own organization was initially founded in 1987 in response to the AIDS epidemic, and some of our first funding came from CDC. So if you think about education governance, we sort of think about it as a cast of thousands. You've got stuff happening at the state, you've got some stuff happening at the school district, and then you have things happening at the building. And I think if there's one message for public health that I would share, it's that when you're trying to drive a change, whether it is a service change, a policy change, a program change, it is understand where is the appropriate point of entry. So I'm going to just give you a quick quiz. How many of you can name your state chief state school officer, your state superintendent of ed? Okay, not bad. Homework assignment for the rest of you. Go find out who that person is. How many of you know how your state board of education is selected? Okay, homework assignment for the rest of you. Go find out. How many of you can name your local superintendent of education? Much better. Again, reflecting what we have traditionally done in this country, which has said it's all about locals. But to go back to our sunscreen example, I'll continue to read from USA Today. Parents who find that their school or camp lacks a sensible sun safety policy can form committees to change the policies, he said. Well, think about, let's just stick with sun safety for a minute. Think about your kid. So maybe they're going to school this year in Montgomery County, Maryland. But you get a great job outside of Baltimore, and so you move. And you move to Baltimore County. Wouldn't it be really nice if your policy around sun safety didn't have to be rethought every time you change districts? So, you know, we really encourage folks to think about where are the most reasonable points to have a policy change. And if states are responsible for equity, then state policy may be as important or more important than local policy. So this is just kind of a summary of some of the state role things that we've already talked about. My colleague Sharon Adams Taylor from the American Association of School Administrators likes to say that boards set policies and superintendents carry it out at the district level. One of the things about school districts is that they vary by their size, their structure, the number of schools, and too often in many states, the governance and reporting for our boards of education, our districts of education, and our departments of health, our local departments of health, don't align, which just adds another barrier. So how many of you are from local departments of health? Okay, in your local department of health, how many school systems, show of fingers, how many different school systems do you have to deal with? Two, one, four, two, five, did I hear somebody say 80? Okay, where state are you in? Okay. So you can, 10, you can see, so, okay, so again, in Maryland, anybody here from Maryland? We got 24 school systems, 24 departments of health. It's a little easier. Now, that may not make it easier on a day-to-day basis, and you could probably tell me it doesn't, but certainly if I'm thinking about points of intervention, when you have things that line up nice and logically, it probably is sometimes an easier place to start. So one of the things that happens when we talk about education is we talk about this thing called local control. So what does that really mean? It means that depending on the policies, boards and superintendents may have some leeway on what they do. Oftentimes, state policy consists of a recommendation, not a mandate. School boards are often independent of other agencies and other governance structures. So you might have a school board over here that is directly elected by the citizens, but you have a planning department or a health department that reports directly to a city or county executive. All states, I used to work at the Council of Chief State School Officers. I think in my 8 years there, I talked to every chief state school officer in the country, and you know what they all told me? Oh, we're a local control state. But that looks really different. And so one of the most important things I think I can say is that when you want to do this kind of state work, really try to spend the time understanding how these channels of control operate. What really is a state responsibility? What really is left to the locals? And where does the federal policy or law trump everything else? Working with school districts takes time. School buildings are often places where principals have traditionally had a lot of autonomy, and it's where the rubber of implementation meets the road. Principals and educators need tools to implement policies, training, resources, knowledge, skills. They're not health professionals. Many of them have access to a health professional through a school nurse, but not all of them. And many schools certainly don't have access to a full-time school nurse. This is I'm just going to skip ahead a little bit because I think some of this other stuff will come out. So what really matters to schools? Here are some of the things you'll hear schools talking about: accountability, results, achievement gap, disparities in achievement, disaggregation of data, Thank you to public health, we actually learned how to disaggregate data from public health. When I started doing work at school health, we didn't disaggregate our school results data. We just talked about this monolith of kids. So we actually didn't know where our gaps were. So when you start talking to folks in education, often some of the questions they might want to ask you is, can you link this to what I'm being held accountable for? How will your immunization initiative help me keep kids in school? Why is this the role of the school? How will we pay for it? Who will do it? What do we have to give up? You want me to have an immunization clinic in my multipurpose room? Great idea. Where am I going to have my gym classes those days? Those are just not unanswerable questions, but important questions to think about. Some questions for you as you go in towards these relationships or build, trying to strengthen the ones you have. Who actually has the decision-making authority? What are the laws, rules, and regulations that are in place that govern how those decisions are made? Who can change them? What is it you actually want from the school? So one issue is sometimes we say to our schools folks, we really want you to support school health initiatives. What does support mean? How would you, somebody give me, what would a support look like? Having a plan. Okay, we want you to... Right, but if you, so you go to your superintendent, you say, I want your support. Support can't be you need to be more specific. Support is, yes, I support you. Support is, I need you to take this plan before the school board. I need you to speak out for it in public. I need you to instruct your principals to do this. Think of it as any other marketing. We don't say to folks, we want you to take care of your heart. We have a set of ABCs that we tell people. It's the same thing in school health. Can I tie this to the mission of the schools? Can I answer the hard questions? Are we prepared for controversy? Do not leave your school superintendent hanging out there on the rafters of condom distribution with no backup. Can we document the problem? And have I engaged staff and policymakers before coming with a hard ask? Have I framed my ask for them? Obviously, you need champions. Where you can help the decision along. So I'm going to stop there because I know there are some questions. I know our third speaker has shown up, and I want to make sure that she gets her fair time as well. So thank you.